It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Welcome back to Sunday Vibes, extra time. Coming up on Anything But Clickbait, we fix another club. This time it's Real Madrid. Woo-hoo. Chris Hamill will be kicking something out of football, and Patrick will be playing Facts with Rafa Benitez.
Facts.
Okay, before we start then, a massive thank you to everyone that tuned in last week. We went to number 3 in the UK charts, Woo! Fresh off the bat, Van Straten. We're also first in New and Noteworthy.
Yes, which really where I wanted to be, Noteworthy.
Didn't know was a section. So, Joe Rogan at number 1, we're coming for you, and we're coming for you in the shape of fixing Real Madrid with week 2's episode. Ooh, However, such is the size of this task, we've broken it down into bite-sized chunks.
Yes.
So we're each bringing a manager to the table. We're each bringing a superstar to fill that Ronaldo-shaped void at the Bernabeu. Mm. We're looking at heirs to Luka Modric's 33-year-old throne. And we're each picking a wild card just for laughs. Okay, before we delve into manager then, I'm going to provide a bit of context.
Yes, please do, because what has happened to Lopetegui's life?
On last season,
he's gone down the drain.
This season, well, in the space of 135
days. He had a great job
days,
like 6 months ago.
I mean, he's been working 15 years to reach this point in football, and in 135 days, it's all come crashing down, hasn't he? He's lost the top 2 jobs in Spanish football.
He must be the most hated man in Spain. Genuinely, is there a more hated man in Spain than the man who was axed from Madrid and pissed off the entire Spanish nation at the World Cup?
Was that his fault? Was that his fault?
Yes.
We covered... Oh, fine. Okay. Glad we sorted that out.
Definitively. Moving on. Yes, was nothing to do with Rubiales. Anyway, I'm going to have to pour one out for... Lopetegui tonight, Flopetegui. Our Halloween party.
Flopetegui.
Because like we said, pretty damning, the statistics. And last season, not great either. Real Madrid lost the league by 17 points, currently occupying 9th.
How has that happened? 9th?
9th. Now, expected points has them on around 18, which is good enough for joint 4th at current. So maybe a bit unfortunate at the start of this season. And with the right appointment, we'd expect them to achieve at least somewhere near their season goals.
They've got
Florentino Perez has reacted very quickly.
Imagine if they missed Champions League football.
Still plenty of time to do that. Now, a few numbers under the Spaniard at the start of this campaign. So Real Madrid was still taking the most shots in the league on 19.7 and conceding the third least, which was marginally better than last season under Zidane in both areas. However, they were almost registering 1.5 less shots on target per 90. A pretty sizable chunk when you consider it's only been 6 this year in total, this season, sorry. So they are missing Ronaldo's decisiveness, who was taking 4.6 of his shots from inside the box from almost a total of 7.
That's mad.
And footed shots as well. That's the difference for me. Shots with the feet. So I looked at this as well. And they actually take more shots inside the box than Barcelona this season. But like you said, only 6 on target a game to Barcelona's 8. And the difference is that most of those for Real Madrid are headers. They're getting a lot of headed chances. That's how they have pushed ahead of Barcelona in terms of shot numbers, but why their shot quality is ranked lower. So Understat have them ranked as having the 3rd best attack in La Liga, which is not good enough, and having the 8th best defence, though in fairness, Barcelona are 10th.
Nice, great work peeling back the veil there, Van Straten.
I feel a little bit sorry. I have to say, as much as I hammered Lopetegui a minute ago, I feel a little bit sorry for him.
He's changed.
I do feel a little bit sorry for him. You know, he came into the biggest club in the world under the worst possible circumstances, really, in terms of it was a total fiasco, the World Cup. It was a total fiasco.
Yeah. I mean, and they had 100 million in the bank and only spent 30 on Mariano.
Yeah.
So he's lost 50 goals and he's also lost Kovacic on loan and effectively replaced neither.
Yeah.
So you do feel for him, him in that regard.
To be fair to him, though, there were also bad decisions, right? So when you watch that Barcelona game, there were times when they were not pressing, sitting off, but also playing a high line, not tracking runners.
But there was also good decisions in that game.
Well, yeah, like he's not a
going
bad
back,
he's not a
going
bad
to a
coach.
3 at half time, sorry.
He's not a bad coach, but he's not, I don't think he's at Real Madrid level. Like I kind of feel that he got a losing hand and played it pretty badly.
Yeah. You know? And also when you lose, like you say, you lose Ronaldo, you lose all your depth, it's going to be an issue. And I have to say, we've all kind of come to an agreement that Zinedine Zidane, whilst not potentially the best tactician in world football, was clearly one of the best man managers and motivators in the game.
We'll come on to that, I think, when we talk about managers, because I have questions.
I mean, Sergio Ramos has said as much in recent weeks, and Florentino Perez needs to hire someone that rules with the silk glove as opposed to the iron fist. But that probably says more about Sergio Ramos, and we will touch upon him again later. But back to the shot numbers, because we're building a picture up to a style of play in which we can then pick a manager who is suitable to fulfil. But back to the shot numbers, because this is starting to build a picture in terms of which type of manager can take over, which style of play this current personnel is suited to. So only Gareth Bale is taking above 2.5 shots per 90 in this Real Madrid team at the moment, with 3.9. So Karim Benzema is second on 2.5. 2.2 of Gareth Bale's 3.9 shots, Joseph, come from inside the box. Okay. Now, this is decent. A good return from
the
Welshman.
That sounds pretty good to me.
But it's nowhere near Ronaldo's 4.4. And that's where we start factor in this lack of decisiveness. And, Pato, there's things at play that are harder to quantify when Ronaldo's playing, right?
Well, yeah, there's an idea in basketball of gravity, which is the way that great players attract defenders to them. So I think that when you had Ronaldo on the pitch, not only were you getting high-quality shots from him, but he was making other people's shots higher quality because defenders were attracted to him. So when, not in that way, but so when, you know, a team had to say, like Espanyol or whatever, had to double up on Ronaldo, had to send two guys over there to deal with him, it meant that if Bale got the ball in the box, Benzema, Asensio, Isco, and people like Toni Kroos from the edge of the box, if they were getting the ball there, then the quality of their shots was going to be higher because they had fewer guys between them and the goal.
So effectively, what we're saying is without Ronaldo, their shot numbers have gone right down and also their shot positions aren't as good.
Yes, that's exactly
well
what we're saying.
Summarised. I mean, they started the season quite well with that fluid front three of Benzema, either Asensio or Vasquez and Gareth Bale, stuck a bunch past Girona. But it's fast become stale up there. And Karim Benzema, his purple patch is seemingly over. Now, 8 of this 20-man squad are 28 or over, and 6 of those are pretty much starters. So Modric, Ramos, Marcelo, Bale, Benzema and Nacho. So this is a team that needs turning over come the end of the year in a big way, which is probably why Zidane got out of Dodge, to be quite frank.
At the perfect time. Can I just say, well done to Zinedine Zidane, because if ever you
drop mic moments,
if it, a time to leave a club, it's now.
It's before the music starts playing at the Oscars, you know, where they like play you off the stage.
Yeah, you got he's in just trying before. To... Just cracking stuff.
And thanks
from
to my mum.
A few promising signs under Lopetegui. Now, a lot of statisticians have noted that their press has been far more aggressive and reactive, which leads me to Pochettino. Now, Lopetegui was also playing a 4-2-3-1.
He was also
playing 4-3-3. He was also experimenting with three at the back. So there's remnants, the shades of Pochettino at the start of this campaign in what Lopetegui was trying to make work. Now, I think Pochettino is the outstanding candidate. I've got some research on him. I know that you boys were kind of... had similar thoughts, but I want to hear from you guys first.
So, yeah, we're obviously picking a manager now, I'm guessing. And are we all agreeing Pochettino is probably the outstanding candidate right now?
Yes.
Because I think actually...
He's the favourite with the bookies, isn't he?
I actually think, for me, he's not the ideal fit because I don't know whether this squad and Real Madrid as a club are set up for somebody who's going to have such a clearly defined tactical blueprint as Maurizio Pochettino. I don't know whether you can come in and you can make Marcelo play in the defend narrow and then attack wide. I don't know whether you can ever make Marcelo defend narrowly. I don't even know whether you can make Marcelo defend, to be totally honest.
I think you can. I think Marcelo's improved a lot defensively. But I know what you're saying. Like, you almost think that if you get in Poch, the superstar you get in to replace Ronaldo has to be the guy who buys into his system and then makes everybody else come along with them. The good thing is, I think Modric would do it. I think Modric would commit to it. And if Modric commits to it, then I think other people go. But it's actually a reasonable point that we have never seen Real Madrid have a pressing coach. Ever.
No, and and definitely not someone that's just got a clear tactical blueprint going forward as Pochettino. I mean, obviously, we've seen tacticians like Mourinho come in and be quite dogged with their style, but definitely not as well-versed going forward as Pochettino's sides are.
Zidane was all about defending passing channels, kind of covering your defensive shadow, wasn't he? Sort of tucking in and sort of minimising the half spaces. We've all seen a Tifo video on Zidane's Real Madrid, but you're right, this would be a massive transition. But what I was trying to say with Lopetegui is that he was kind of introducing things that were Poch-esque, so maybe it wouldn't be too much of a leap for this squad
whereas Lopetegui was probably too big a step at that time for that coach who didn't command or have command of that style, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, for me, if I was Pochettino now and the Real Madrid job was available, I would be nervous still about taking that job.
Massively.
Because I still think it's too close to following the guy, if you get what I mean. In the same way that David Moyes followed the guy in Ferguson, Lopetegui has clearly followed the guy in Zidane. You win three back-to-back Champions League titles in Madrid. You are already a club legend as a player. You are now a deity in Madrid, effectively. And for Pochettino to follow a deity just 6 months after he's left, I think might be too close. But still, I would pick him if I was Madrid.
I think expectations will have gone down as a result of Lopetegui. I think my nervousness, if I were Pochettino, would be about who are they going to get in to be my superstar and how are we going to rebuild? Because I'd also look at Barcelona and I think, Barcelona are not like perfectly primed for domination. Mm. Like, they've got a lot of decent young players, but they've also got a lot of aging stars who are on their way out. And so there'd be a part of me that would think, I can only overachieve like now, depending on who I get in. Like, I don't know. I think Pochettino makes a lot. To me, it's strange that Real Madrid didn't go for Sarri in the summer. I think that he would have been the obvious choice for them. He plays a style of football which is extremely easy to watch. I think it would have suited the players they have at the club. His style also requires pretty much elite defenders to carry it off because they are quite defensively open, and Real Madrid have those in abundance. The only issue would have been, can Bale stay fit enough to be, say, his Insigne type? And clearly he can't stay fit enough to do that. But I think that actually, I think Sarri would have been perfect for them if they'd given him like one superstar attacker.
Yeah.
If they'd taken Hazard there and brought Sarri in, I think Real Madrid would actually be really, really good this season.
I kind of agree with you. I actually was doing some research into Pochettino and I didn't really know his background, where he'd come from. Obviously developed in Argentina, moved to Espanyol. And when he took over as Espanyol manager, you know, they were 10 points from safety when he took over. There's only eight games left.
He won 8 of the last 10.
Yeah, he won 8 of the last 10 games to keep them up. And then obviously left eventually for Southampton, took them to their highest ever points tally in the Premier League.
They were great.
Then went to Tottenham, and he's been doing bits there. But if ever there was a time to leave Tottenham Hotspur, it's now.
Okay, why is that?
Get out the club now for me.
See, I think that because we in particular have worked in football the last 3 or 4 years to an increasingly professional level, let's say, and that's being generous, that we have this newfound expectation of Spurs, especially under Pochettino. But for me, I get what you're saying. There's a financial aspect. There's a taking Pochettino's ambitions into the equation. However, this is the most robust Spurs side. This is a Spurs side transitioning to a truly elite club in the next 2 or 3 years.
And I don't think it is.
18-19 remains Tottenham's best start to a Premier League season. It's just that other teams have gone off like an absolute rocket. I mean, he signed a 5-year deal. Harry Kane, Dele Alli and Davinson Sanchez are locked down until 2024, with Son, Moura and Winks locked down until 2023. I mean, Vertonghen, Alderweireld and Eriksen are up in 2020, so that's a different issue. That presents its own set of problems. And their average age of the last XI was about 27, whereas Madrid's was 29, which is much more manageable. Yeah. So it just depends on where we see and what we see Poch doing.
I mean, I think for me, it's very telling that in his last post-match interview, he said this is the unhappiest he's ever been at the club. Despite all of those players signing long-term contracts over the last year, he's still incredibly unhappy at Tottenham Hotspur.
You actually revealed a great stat about how much interest they're paying at the moment because they've put some stuff up for collateral.
Yeah, the stadium is coming back to bite them massively. And the trouble is when you agree long-term 5 to 6 year deals, double players' wages and build a new stadium, it's going to hurt you financially. They borrowed $400 million from the banks to finance that stadium and new contracts for players. And they're already £237 million over that.
They've gone
59% over budget already. So they're at £637 million in spend on that stadium at the moment. They're still not in there.
So what you might be saying is that them not spending money on players this summer might be the new normal for Spurs.
100% the new normal. The only way that Tottenham Hotspur can afford to buy players going forward is to sell players, in my opinion. And that might well be the case in that they sell one superstar this summer. But I would be surprised given the fact they've locked these players down to 5 to 6 year contracts, unless the reason they've done that is to sell, because they've borrowed so much from the banks. £637 million from the banks in bonds is around the same as the Glazers we're looking at.
Oh my God.
It's absolutely monstrous.
And the interest they're paying equates to about one £30 million player per window. So they can't even sign.
What?
So they can't even sign a Sissoko.
Do you mean summer window?
I mean, 1 year. Yeah, so they're paying about 20 to 30 million pounds in interest on a £600 million bond from the bank.
Oh my God.
Per summer window. So that's one less Sissoko.
And that's with
them, you know what? He was majestic against Manchester City, so shout out.
He was
and that's with them performing to Tottenham's greatest ever level at the moment. If you imagine Pochettino was to leave or the Champions League money fell away, the bank's going to go, well, you're an even riskier lend now, so we'll put some more interest on.
And they're not really in a position like Liverpool where people can say, would a sale of Harry Kane for £200 million facilitate a sort of upward trajectory in terms of, you know, the whole team, like it did with Coutinho, because they couldn't go out and spend just as much. They'd be looking to recoup half and put it towards the stadium.
Or which they don't actually have that many saleable assets.
This is why I'm really surprised that they haven't sold one of those assets in the build-up to the stadium. Well, why would they not have sold a superstar?
Well, that might have pushed Poch over the edge, right?
And I think that's probably what's pushing Pochettino close to the
edge. I also
think
they probably just didn't get an offer. Like, I think the only one who's really going to command the money they'd want for him at the moment is Kane. Because Eriksen, Barcelona could have gone for him, went for Coutinho. Real Madrid are quite stocked for attacking-type midfielders. I mean, Bayern Munich went and got James Rodriguez. And I think people still kind of underrate Dele Alli a little bit. So I reckon that if Dele Alli's the one who I think they'd actually be potentially most willing to let go of.
Yeah. As it see,
he's not one of their own. He doesn't run the team.
But the people who evaluate players have Kane.
Oh yeah, I hate
that. Kane at the most valuable.
The observatory.
Then Dele Alli on like 200 and 140 or 50 million respectively. But funny you should say that about Eriksen, because it's come to light that he might have a chronic stomach problem. So I don't know if anyone's going to want to pick him up for
big
money.
Risk now,
So essentially, and so they're going to lose Alderweireld for a
sellable asset.
And also, I don't even know whether it's just the finances that have put Pochettino in this headspace. If you actually, if I was the manager and I think I've cultivated this really robust, young, talented squad, I've got them up in the league, much better position than they've ever been. I'm not getting the financial backing because we're paying for a new stadium. Fair enough, you know, we're transitioning and becoming a bigger club because of that stadium. But if that stadium's then delayed 6 months, it costs me a place in the Champions League potentially. I'm playing away fixtures in the Cups at the MK Dons. And then it happens on the weekend or Monday night where a ball comes to Eric Lamella the day after an NFL fixture has just been played and bobbles off a quarterback's toe. And he puts it into row Z like a field goal. I lose my head.
In that game, I dug out a really good stat after that game that Spurs only had 4 touches in Manchester City's box all game this season. Kylian Mbappe is averaging 9.8 per game.
I mean, that's nuts.
That is absolutely wrong.
And to be fair, they did have some decent breaks in that game that could turn into more. But it's my other worry if I were Pochettino would be that. Who are the big clubs I might potentially want to go to? PSG, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, maybe Juve.
Are you thinking that his stock might never be higher than it is now?
Well, I'd also think, what if the next manager those clubs hire is the guy? Like, what if Real Madrid hire someone now and nail that appointment and that guy's there for 5 or 6 years? What if Niko Kovac is incredible? And what if I'm stuck with this being the best job I can get unless I want to go and do a whole rebuild at Man United? Mm. Would I not rather do that at Bayern Munich
100%.
Or Real Madrid or PSG?
Which Man United is the other feasible destination, isn't it? Man United
or PSG.
But yeah, PSG took us only got 1 year
left. I think
for
Manchester United, Pochettino is the dream appointment.
Would you
Let's not go back to United.
I was going to say, as Florentino Perez, would you be slightly concerned that his record against the top sides in England, at the very least, is patchy? So 1.3 points per game last season against the so-called big teams, compared to only one game lost for teams from 7th to 17th. So he blows away mid-table mediocrity, doesn't he? But
he also struggles against relegation candidates, though.
How you win the league, though, in Spain.
But not a bad shout. But has he got... Do you think it's a Tottenham problem? Has he got enough weaponry at his disposal to change his game plan? Or is it because they're still not at their apex in terms of how he wants them to play? Harry Kane obviously dropping off the second half of last season didn't help. His shot numbers coming right down. But with me, ultimately, I mean, it may be a lack of depth that's cost him in that regard. But still, food for thought. If you're Florentino
Perez, I'm a big game skeptic.
You don't think they're that important?
I think they're important. Like the results in them are important, but I think like that it's a relatively small sample. And when I look at what he has done in the big games, I think they beat Liverpool under Klopp 4-1. They comfortably beat City 2-0.
That's his only victory over Pep at Manchester City.
They've only played, but they haven't played that many.
Another four fixtures.
Like that's not very many. So two of those were at home, and then you're kind of.
I think
like,
two of those were draws as well.
You expect to lose away. So he's beaten Pep, and then they absolutely battered Real Madrid. When they beat them 3-1, that could have been any score. They were so good against them. So when I see, and of course, Allegri's Juve, they were a little bit unlucky.
Should have smashed Allegri's Juve.
And I don't think it was his fault they didn't, though I thought Allegri's adjustments were good. Like, so in all those instances, I see a manager who is a good problem solver and has beaten the top coaches, even if he hasn't done it quite as much as I'd like. And that would make me think if he had the weaponry, if he had the personnel, he could roll people over.
Well, I say that because it's a roundabout way of highlighting the fact that he's got a net spend of 29 million over his four years at Spurs compared to a Jose, a Pep, who have spent, what?
500.
Those two clubs have spent a billion in the last 10 years.
466.
Even Wenger in his last few years.
I think Arsenal's net spend 238 million in the Pochettino time period.
And look what it costs.
I guess then we're all going to come to an agreement that right now Poch is the manager.
Poch is the guy.
Do you want to briefly touch upon other people? Like, just throw them in the hat, maybe just a couple minutes. Maybe
I think I actually,
some of the candidates because I've got Jardim and Wenger down. I've got Wenger down until
It just can't be Wenger.
To be honest, Wenger is in the style of Zidane and Ancelotti, I would say, in the. But what they needed in the past was a guy who knew how to get their best talent on the field. Zidane did that, Ancelotti did that. Neither one of the, particularly not Zidane, not really a plus value manager. What they do is they get the best out of your squad as you have it. Pochettino can make your team, can make the players play like a much better side than they should be based on the quality of the players because of how they play. Mm. If you understand my point, like I think having that high press actually gives you more quality as a team than you have as individuals. And so I think if you still had Ronaldo, if it were the Real Madrid team of 2-3 years ago,
couldn't agree more.
Wenger would be a perfectly decent solution for half a season because he will put your best players on the pitch. He'll get the attack humming, the defence. You're basically doing what you did under Zidane, which is hope that Sergio Ramos and Varane solve your problems and Casemiro. But right now, they don't need that. They need somebody who is able to get more out of this team than by all rights they should be able
to
produce.
So new solutions, someone that can produce more than the sum of the parts. So what about Jardim for 6 months? Because it's looking like it's Conte. Guillaume Balaguer is convinced it's Conte. He's got the inside track, hasn't he? Jardim could maybe help get the best out of Asensio, Llorente, Vinicius Jr. I mean, Rodrigo's coming in next year, isn't he? Odegaard's on loan, but he can turn over a squad, can't he? So do you even consider him, before we move on, just to flirt with other people, barring Pochettino?
Jardim, at Real Madrid, you need more immediate success than Jardim can provide. You've got a year-long life cycle at Madrid. And if Jardim takes 2 years to turn a squad over, he's gone in 18 months, if his team are fifth or sixth in the league. You have no luxury for error. And he's had luxury for error at Micah.
Yeah, but if you're the guy hiring him, then you can take the attitude of, well, I'm not going to sack him in 18
but
months.
But Florentino Perez will never take
that
attitude.
Florentino Perez, what is fundamentally the problem at Real Madrid is Florentino Perez. Florentino Perez is the root of almost every issue they have. They have other smaller problems, but pretty much everything stems from Florentino Perez.
Interesting that they're looking to build a new stadium soon as well. He's looking to secure his legacy with that new stadium, and that might impinge.
And that'll be the Florentino
on
Perez
much,
arena.
Yeah, how much people can spend.
It's just a state. Like, so I just think, I understand what you're saying about Jardim. Though Jardim is quite good at practical solutions in the short term. When he first took over Monaco, incredibly solid defensive side, really boring, played 4-4-2. And would just win games 1-0, had the best defence in Serie A, Ligue 1. And then a few years later, tearing up the league, top scorers in Europe. Like, now, they were a bit lucky that season. They overperformed in attack. But the fact is, he is able to play different styles. Mm-hmm. And when I look at this squad now, with Conte, you're essentially gambling on the fact that Conte will create such a solid defence that you will win games 1-0.
Yeah, you'll be able to
2-1.
Shut out games.
Yeah. Whereas Jardim
after
can do that,
yeah.
He can also outscore teams.
Okay,
that's
so my main issue with Antonio Conte, and I think it's a glaring one, is that throughout his career, or at least for his recent career, he has had by far the most success operating with a three at the back. Mm-hmm. And I do not look at this Real Madrid squad and think they have set up for three at the back. They're three centre-backs, and Nacho, Ramos and Varane.
I mean,
beyond that, there's nothing.
Did you see the back three, though, against Barcelona second half in El Clásico?
But I mean, that's when they're going balls to the wall.
They did concede a couple of goals late on, but they were very unfortunate. They equalised when they went to three at the back because it meant that Marcelo could push up the pitch. And we've all spoke about this before. He can be one of their best attackers when he's in those zones. And I think Benzema missed a sitter. They also hit the post. So there was virtues to playing three at the back. They were much better at transitioning the ball because they just lacked a bit of pace and impetus before then. I mean, yeah, they were just dead in the water before that change. Which makes me think that maybe Conte can come in. I think the biggest appeal about Conte for Florentino Perez at the moment is that he's an authoritarian. And there is, now Ronaldo's gone, and Ronaldo spoke out against Perez saying that he didn't treat me like a human being. And Ramos is pretty much echoing those sentiments that he wants to win back some power from the dressing room. And apparently Sergio Ramos is public enemy number one when it comes to that.
I'm not surprised.
So I think, I don't know, the allure of a disciplinarian might prove too strong to appoint anyone above Conte. But are we going to go for Poch?
I think we should go for Poch.
Poch is perfect, I'd say, in that sense, in that he is very clearly in charge of his dressing room. But his players don't think of him as someone who's telling them off all the time, you know, who's strict with them.
Yeah.
They're like in a cult, the way they talk about it. Like, and the way he puts an arm around a player and he can bring them back into the fold. Like last season, I couldn't see a way for Alderweireld to come back into the team. And this year, suddenly, Alderweireld is like really willing to play for him
same
again.
For Danny
really,
Rose.
Really wants to do a job. Yeah, Danny Rose, exactly the same. And so sometimes when a player says they want to leave Spurs, you see them cut out, like with Kyle Walker, they just said he's going. And
I wonder whether that was.
Did not care.
I wonder whether that was a bit of cash towards the stadium. 50 million there. Chuck that towards it, boy.
Almost certainly. And they said, you know what, we'll get Serge Aurier. And he was like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, make a 30 mil profit on that one.
But I think that Pochettino gives you an authoritarian, but with kind of a lighter touch than Conte seems to have. So Pochettino just
Pochettino
seems,
for me.
He's
Pochettino
the sensible choice.
We're going to have to move forward with Poch, aren't we? So all of our managers
are Poch.
Are the same person.
Yes.
So we don't need to decide that come the end because we're actually going to...
Would have liked Sarri.
One of the caveats we've got for this section is that we have to go with one person's suggestion for each section, right?
Yes.
So we've got a perfect meld, or maybe not a perfect meld, but a solution that's comprised of something we've all brought to the table.
Okay.
But we've agreed, very diplomatically from the offset, that Poch is the manager.
Yes.
Okay, so are we going to go into superstar,
superstar
next, gentlemen?
Superstar they should
sign. Who wants to take the lead with superstar?
I'm perfectly happy to.
Go on then, mate.
Just a note, like the first week, we don't know what each of his options are, so it's genuine surprise.
Yes.
It would be amazing if some of these line up.
I have gone, well, pretty much all of the names that I'm bringing to the table for all of these sections
Can we guess your
are
superstar?
Big, and you'll be able to guess him fairly comfortably. Go on.
Neymar.
No.
See, I didn't think anyone would go for Neymar because it's so obvious.
I have gone for Harry Kane.
Wow.
Okay. The Hurricane is coming to Madrid.
The legless wonder.
I've gone for Kane mainly because Pochettino's taking over and I think
he's bringing his golden boy
I
with
just
him.
Think that yeah. you need a player that epitomises the system Pochettino
the
plays
Jesse
and nobody does it more than Harry Kane. It's good age profile as well. 25 turns 26 next July. The negative obviously is that contract, 6-year contract signed in July. If you want Kane, you're paying a world record fee.
And his injury.
Absolutely.
He's not really looked like the same player since that knee injury. And I wonder if he'll ever get back to being a shot monster.
Yeah. I mean, I dug out some statistics about that injury, actually. It was an ankle. It was an ankle under Begovic, not a knee, by the way. But...
Oh, okay.
It was an ankle. And do you
so
know
what? That February injury when he was rushed back?
That February injury against Bournemouth.
I've always thought it was a knee.
Yeah, it was an ankle. But you know what? When people first talked about that injury, they were like, this could be 3 months out.
Yeah.
Do you know he actually only missed two games?
Yeah, in that he time came back for the Chelsea game.
He was injured on March the 12th and arrived back onto the pitch on April the 1st.
Yeah, because I remember his returning three games. He had one shot against someone like Newcastle, two against Brighton and one against someone else. And everyone was like, well, they've rushed him back
and
ahead of the World Cup.
There is clearly a drop-off. Pre-injury, 0.7 XG. Post-injury, 0.4. That's per 90. Ooh. Yeah, so pretty impressive stuff.
That's Luis Suarez from like 28 to 30.
He was taking, yeah.
That's what Aubameyang put up just in that window from January to the end of the season.
He was taking
exactly
about 5.7 shots per 90 before the injury. Now down to 3. So it's a significant drop.
He's gone from being one of about four guys in the world who get over five shots a game to being
in a massive band where people get three
pretty
to
much
four.
The average for your centre forward.
But what I will say is that I actually believe Harry Kane will get back to his level. There's something that's telling me he can return.
And there are a couple of times recently as well where he has hit four or five shots in a game.
And I don't think this is a Torres terminal illness. Like, this is not a Torres situation. He is going to come back for me. And I think maybe the way he comes back is he moves clubs.
Interesting.
Which is an interesting statement. But I just think that in a really hyper-dominant Real Madrid side that are going to control the ball a lot and create a lot of chances for he'll score even more
goals.
And
he doesn't have to play every game. Like, Spurs can't afford...
He's averaging 46 games a season.
And Spurs can't afford to drop him and play Llorente even against, like, Huddersfield. They have to play Kane.
Yeah. By the way, can I just say, I think Fernando Llorente may be one of the worst signings in the Premier League era.
I wrote a script the other day where I made an argument that signing him was worse for Spurs than signing Moussa Sissoko.
14 million.
Gorgeous eyes, though. You could literally get lost in them. You could swim in them. However...
But it's like they've never seen him
well,
play.
I mean, Vincent Janssen and Kudu and G and Llorente, that's about £100 million worth of talent between them. And how many goals would they have shared?
In fairness, they got rid of Ngie, and Ngie's just starting to look good again. Like, but at least Ngie and Janssen, I got. And Kudu, no one could work out why they went for him. But Ngie and Janssen were like young gambles. Llorente is an old
soldado
man who's like never played football in the style that Spurs want him to.
So just to go back to Kane. And away from NG.
Yeah, it's a Spanish Ricky Lambert, wasn't it? He'll be the person we lump it up to.
Well, no wonder Poch thought it worked. He got 14 out of Ricky Lambert. And that's how happened, didn't he? So, but anyway, just to go back to Kane, I actually looked at him versus Ronaldo. Obviously, Ronaldo pre-injury. Last season, Madrid were taking 18.4 shots. We might have mentioned earlier. Ronaldo was taking 36% of Real Madrid shots.
Oh, my God.
Harry Kane was taking 35% of Tottenham Hotspur's shots. And Tottenham were taking 16.4 a game. So not dissimilar to Real Madrid. They shoot a lot, and Kane shoots a hell of a lot.
He's very two-footed as well, actually, quite
like Ronaldo. Very two-footed. 20% of his goals across his career have come with his left foot, which is not too bad. 60% have come with his
left. I love that you had that ready to go, by the way.
60% of his goals have come with his right.
I didn't even know I was teeing you up then.
I know.
I was.
60% of his goals have come with his right, but that includes penalties. And if you take penalties out, it drops to 50. Which is pretty impressive, and 20% has come with his head.
Yeah, so he's tremendous in the air.
Superb all-round forward. I think he can replace the shot dominance of Cristiano Ronaldo. I think he can replace the off-the-ball work of Karim Benzema.
Oh,
he
the might... creativity as well. Like when England beat Spain.
Unbelievable. Do you know he's actually averaging 2.6 key passes a game, Harry
this
Kane,
season?
Across the last three seasons.
I think that'll be third in the squad.
Absolutely.
Behind Eriksen, maybe that's
fantastic, but not to be wholly unexpected, I guess, just because when he does drop deep, Spurs have a lot of willing runners there.
For sure, but I look at Karim Benzema and I think he's tailing off in a big way. 14-15.
He's done.
14-15, 3.6 shots. 15-16, 2.4 shots. 17-18, 2 shots. He's tailing off. And I think Harry Kane can produce his off-the-ball work, his work ethic, his creativity. I think he can also replace Cristiano Ronaldo's shot numbers. For me, Harry Kane, as costly as he is, kills two birds with one stone. And he also fits the Pochettino mould of being the epitome of the system he wants to develop at the club.
I mean, if Poch leaves and they're willing to pay £200 million.
It's a win-win scenario. Get him out. His off-the-ball runs are a phenomenon. The Eric Lamella chance that he misses against Manchester City is all Harry Kane. Harry Kane makes...
Dele Alli as well, right?
One of the best runs I've seen this season across, drags two central defenders with Harry Kane, and Dele Alli has a 15-yard pass to a completely free Eric Lamella, all because Harry Kane's off-the-ball movement was unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a smart player, man.
What a player Harry Kane would be at Madrid.
We're looking at doing this next summer, right, buying these players in. So if at the end of the season he's back to even four and a half shots a game, then I'd be thinking, okay, let's go for this.
Anything which suggests that injury isn't terminal.
The issue is the six-year contract signed in July. That, and we know how much of a bastard Daniel Levy is.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I do think Daniel Levy is not sentimental. At least.
And he's a really great operator. If he gets a fair price, and what is fair when you've got Real Madrid as a potential customer, he will leave.
If they say we're going to give you £250 million for Harry Kane, then Spurs will say, we'll have your hand off and we can pay off a third of our debt.
Okay, so I'm bringing Kane. Who's bringing someone else?
Right, I've deployed a slightly different tact. Okay, so I've thought there's a bit of a
outside Harry Kane, who's a very good candidate, there's a dearth of sort of top-level number nines available because we're looking to fill that 50-goal void, aren't we? That's very clearly obvious.
Is it a cut?
Very clearly.
I genuinely don't know who you're going
problem
for.
Problem number one.
We might have the same player.
Yeah, despite the fact, you know, we need a midfielder as well. Lopetegui wasn't convinced about the Rafa Varane Ramos partnership, which is something I might revisit with my wild card. Might.
Ooh.
Tempting. Anyway, so my rationale for this has been to look at the most dominant teams around Europe and see if I can pick anyone off from that team come next year.
Okay.
Okay, so Manchester City's expected goal difference per match in the Premier League is 2.5.
But that's the Pep effect, surely.
Per game.
They create
2.5
yeah, but that's the Pep effect.
Hold on.
Yeah, to some extent, yeah.
No one else is above one, okay? So when people talk about Jurgen Klopp and Pep being in the same league, okay?
Get out the door now.
And the best other teams in Europe are around point, like 1.7, 1.8.
Well, funny you should say that, Patrick, because that leads me quite nicely into Juventus. I also went knocking on their door, looking for fat to trim from the Juve squad. Their expected goal difference per match is 1.4, but they're the only team in this area that also concede under 10 shots. So theirs doesn't have to be as high because their defence is absolutely
I'm on the edge of my seat here. Who are you picking?
Right, so Manchester City and Juve. Okay, they might be willing to part with one of their superstars come the end of the year because they're always transitioning.
Who is going out here?
You've got the same two people. You've got the same two people on your shortlist, I think, that I have.
Oh, no way, Sergio Aguero.
No.
No, that's a horrible move.
Is it now?
Is that who you're going for?
I think.
Or are you doing a double section here, you narcissist?
I've got a couple of players, but it's not going to be anywhere near as elongated as Harry Kane. All right, Sergio Aguero came to mind because I believe that Gabriel Jesus is waiting to be that mainstay up front. He's waiting to take the 30-year-old's place. I don't think it's going to happen this season, especially not with the start that Aguero's made.
Hopefully it does, because he's in 10.
But it may happen next season. Gabriel Jesus won't stick around for another 2 years if he's only getting very limited minutes.
How old is Aguero? 30?
30 going on 31.
And he has been so good this season. He's got a claim to be like third, fourth best player in the world right now.
I completely agree. And what do Real Madrid need right now? They need goals. We're not looking to future-proof this Real Madrid side. There's so many holes in it. We just need to replace that Ronaldo-shaped void in the form of 5 shots per game for the next year to really kind of paper over the cracks, for want of a better phrase. Now, he's taking 4.7 shots per game. 3.2 of them are from inside the box. Okay, so no one in Europe gets better quality chances, probably other than Ronaldo
but
still at
again,
Juventus.
Again, I bring
than Sergio Aguero. Hold on,
but I bring it back. No, I'm going to rebuttal that one point because the 3.2 chances inside the box is because he's playing for Pep. He wouldn't be playing for Pep at Madrid.
Yeah, but he's going to have decent players around him.
Of course he is.
Yeah,
but his numbers are going to fall right off a cliff for that level.
You think right off a cliff? A player of his level playing at Real Madrid?
Well, nobody at Real Madrid is having anywhere near that.
Outside of playing Atletico Madrid, who
actually Mariano
shots
in limited minutes. Mariano, the reason Mariano
don't you dare say Mariano?
Yeah, but my point. Yeah, but that's exactly my point. Mariano, in just a couple of hundred minutes this season, is averaging 5.5 shots a game. But the reason that doesn't show up is because he hasn't played enough minutes for that to be statistically significant. But that just shows that if he can get that in limited minutes, I think Sergio Aguero can do that anywhere. But bear in mind, his last season at Atletico Madrid, how many did he get? 21 in the league or something?
How many years ago was that? 11 years ago.
Yeah, but that's remarkable.
11 years ago, two snapped knees and two broken ankles.
His shots per game have very rarely dropped below 4, and that's even in City sides that have been transitioning.
Don't get me wrong, I love Sergio Aguero. I think he's probably the best striker in the world
right
now.
But
his profile is totally wrong for Madrid.
I could not disagree more for the reasons I've just said that you clearly didn't absorb, mate. All right.
I just think...
Hold on. Right, come on. 1.5 key passes to boot as well, which is good enough for second at Madrid in terms of creative numbers.
Numbers.
That's level with Ceballos and Isco. And like I said, Gabby Jesus only clocked up 2 starts so far. That's 296 minutes in total. And he is the future of Manchester City. If Pep, who was willing to sell him a year ago, can get anything close to 80-90 to reimburse in a central midfielder, for example, if that pays for Ruben Neves and some next summer, then I think that City, again, unsentimental owners, all business, will be willing to depart with someone like Sergio Aguero, especially if Aguero is guaranteed minutes elsewhere. And there's no way he doesn't score 25 to 30 league goals from ages 30 to 33.
There is, because...
At 33?
Because of his knees.
He's just had surgery at the end worries of the season, me. And he said he's never felt better. And I've got 16 goals to back that up at the start of this campaign. And his numbers haven't gone supernova, but they're certainly better than they have been over the last couple of years.
Don't get me wrong, I really like Sergio Aguero, but I have to say that Real Madrid need to future-proof more than signing a 30-year-old with dodgy knees who's an Atletico Madrid fan.
I think that comes after someone like Aguero. They've dug themselves into such a deep hole that I think they now need a stopgap between the transitioning. You can't overhaul that many players, in my opinion, in one summer. Now, if you didn't like Aguero, you might not like Part B, all right? Because he's also...
We're going to let you have Part B.
Well, you interrupted me about seven times, so I'm taking Part B. He's 28 going on 29. He might not cost a lot. He's got 73, 98 for Lazio, 69 this campaign, Ciro Immobile. 3.5 shots per game, 2 inside the penalty area. Aguero light, let's say. Someone that they might be able to bring in for 50 to 60. And if he can guarantee them 20 league goals for the next, I'd say even 18 months to 2 years, then we can look to bring in someone that's 21, 22, that's not, you know, Neymar, that might be Mbappe further down the
line. That's a more sensible move for me than Aguero, even though it's a much inferior player. However, it does feel like the sort of champagne version of Mariano, which is, let's get a striker from a team below our level and hope that he pops for us the way he popped last season. Like, and don't get me wrong, Immobile's put up 2-3 seasons now of excellent numbers.
In the same league, but couldn't do it abroad.
Well, yeah, fair point. But I also think maybe if the amount of money I'd have to pay to get Immobile, I might be able to get, say, Timo Werner? Or, people I was considering, Sterling has 1 year left on his contract at the end of the season. Leroy Sané looks like he is not wanted at Manchester City. Genuinely looks like he's not wanted at the moment.
Ooh, he could be my wild card.
He's my wild card as well, Patrick. So watch yourself.
One of those boys. Christian Pulisic at the end of the season has a year left on his contract. These are kind of interesting guys. Memphis Depay, who we talked about.
So who's your superstar then?
My superstar is Paulo Dybala.
Okay, I crossed Paulo Dybala and Harry Kane out continuously for 2 hours.
I'd say my final three were Sterling, Sané and Dybala. And Dybala is ready to go now. He's 24, he turns 25 in 2 weeks' time, I think. And also, I think it's easier to find elite wingers than it is to find a player like Dybala. If you don't get Sterling or Sané, there's Pulisic coming along, there's Lozano coming along, there's Neres, like... there's Bailey. Like, these are not that level yet, but you look around and there are plenty of wingers. How many players are there like Paulo Dybala knocking about? This is a guy who is an elite shot taker, an elite chance creator. His worst numbers on record, he had about 5 combined shots and key passes per 90. That's this season. And the reason for that is because there's a guy sitting in his zone and eating all his shots, and it's Cristiano Ronaldo.
120 plus goal season, right, which was last year.
220 plus goal seasons. Oh no, I'm looking at goals and assists combined here. However, he is always overperforming his expected goals. And the fact that he's done
by
that...
by 8 last campaign.
That's too much, but he's generally done it by 3 or 4. And the fact that he's done that in 3 of the last 4 seasons suggests he is an elite finisher.
But for me...
And Juve have never had a supercharged attack until this season.
But do you operate Paulo Dybala as an out-and-out 9, or do you play him as a second striker?
This is the advantage of him. He is a problem-solving type of player, in that you can play him as a 9, you can play him as a 10, you can play him off the right. So if I've got Gareth Bale... I'm happy to play him as a 10 behind literally a donkey. I don't care. A real donkey.
But is that not where you want Isco? 26 years old?
No, Isco is nowhere near as good as Dybala and never has been. And
Oh my God!
Fire in the booth.
And also, I feel like... I'm not sure how much Isco is going to fit Pochettino, to be honest with you. But
I mean, that's a fairer point.
But yeah. I feel like Dybala, I'm happy to play him as a 9 and see how he does, because last season, nearly 5 shots a game he was taking.
I actually think Dybala would be amazing.
You know, I've got a soft spot for him ever since I rebuilt Juventus on Scout Report.
Yeah, well, the fact that he got nearly 5 shots a game last season suggests that he would be ready to explode if you put him in the 9 position. And bear in mind, there was a time with Messi when no one said he could play as a striker. Everyone said, best off the right, best as a second striker. People said the same with Mo Salah. And to me, Dybala is more talented than Mo Salah, even if he doesn't have the top-line pace.
What I really like about Dybala is he raises his game for the Champions League as well. His creative numbers are supercharged in the Champions League, over 3 key passes a game. But I think he'd dovetail really nicely, like he did with Higuain last year, with it.
out and out number nine as 10.
But you do have, you do technically have,
maybe Aguero, but you maybe
do,
a Mobley.
You do have a couple of nines there though. They may not be elite, but like look at the numbers that he got out of Mandzukic at Juventus and Higuain, who I think was on the way down.
Mandzukic got five goals last year.
Mandzukic though, he managed to create a lot of chances for him, and the way they dovetailed was important because Mandzukic was who he played off in order to create chances
for
himself.
He was the battering ram. Yeah.
I think Mariano could do that. I think Benzema could do that, even if you don't expect a lot of goals out of him now. Even Borja Mayoral could do it, like, because what he needs is someone who allows him to get the space to create elite shots for himself.
Mm. He's like a Spanish Paddy Roberts, by the way. They look exactly the same.
So I just think, like, if you look at expected goals over last season, like, it puts his combined goals and assists at 18 last season, 17 the season before, 23 the season before that, and 21. And that 21 was in his last season at Palermo, which is pretty incredible. And he's overperformed that every season because, as I said, he's an elite finisher.
And he takes free kicks, doesn't he? When he scores a free kick, his expected goals are going to be a little bit warped.
Sure. And you know what? He always bangs them in from outside the box. And I think actually having a little bit of a... The thing about having Ronaldo is you do need to have the threat of shooting from outside the box because it makes defences drop off a little bit. And Dybala is willing to do either thing. He's also a fantastic dribbler. And to me, it just means that if you don't have a striker you like, you play Dybala up front. If, for instance, you get Dybala and then you're able to take a flyer on a good striker the following summer, you can drop Dybala back into the 10 role. If Gareth Bale gets injured, play Dybala on the right wing. You can do any of these things, and he's going to be fantastic.
He's actually shown this season, more so than any other, that he can play a number of roles up front, as opposed to just being a number 10. Bernard Deschi flirted with replacing on the right. He ended up on the right. He ended up playing in a two with Ronaldo when Allegri played five in midfield. So I do think you're right. I think he'd be a great purchase. However, I would want to get someone more prolific in, let's say, and let him be the creator.
I just think that if I played him up front, I would get. I think I'd get 20 goals out of him.
You think he'd facilitate, like, it'd improve others as well?
Yeah, I do. Okay. And more importantly, I just think that he's probably going to cost the same or less than Kane. And I've none of the injury worries I have about Kane. He's younger than Kane.
Only by a year.
Yeah, but that's a significant difference. It means that
he looks twinky.
It means that he might actually have a little bit of an extra gear to go to. Whereas I think the best case scenario for Kane is that Kane is what he was last season for the rest of his career. Which is, don't get me wrong, that's an incredible upside.
I mean,
but
for me, the
Dybala
reason
could be Messi.
Probably not. That's a big clue.
Okay, but he could be Neymar.
Well, I mean, there's a title for the podcast. So
he there's no reason that Dybala couldn't be Neymar. I think in terms of output.
I think that's an entirely feasible.
So three pretty decent shouts, I think.
I think we have to move on to the heir to Modric.
We'll pick one at the end.
It was a very enjoyable debate, though, and I think...
Yeah, maybe... Well, what we're doing, though, with that one is not just talking about the players we like, but talking about the kind of team we want to build. So these ones should be a bit simpler.
Yes, I mean, they should. But we're going to pick a person at the end, or what?
I think we should pick at the end, ultimately, who we're going to go for. Let one another's answers stew with each other.
Yeah.
And then we'll pick. I think you should kick off the heir to Modric, Josephine.
Okay, so my heir to Modric is also going to cost me an absolute fortune.
Have you just picked a superstar in every category?
Pretty much, because I'm Real Madrid, and that's what we do.
Well, I know who's going to say.
I have picked Paul Pogba as the heir to Modric.
Find a way to sneak United in every
single
week.
I'm sorry, but Paul Pogba is the ideal Real Madrid. If you could draw and hand make a signing for Florentino Perez, it'd be Paul Pogba.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Absolutely.
Dybala
perfect.
Pogba.
I like to think that's a thing around Madrid. Someone draws.
Yeah.
Someone draws
Who's that?
Perez's
signing.
Who does that
look like? That look like?
Yeah, it's like, what if you had the feet of Ronaldo?
Absolute commercial behemoth he would be coming through the door for
there
Florentino
he is, Ed Woodward.
Perez. We would be getting absolutely loads of social media traffic over that weekend.
Oh, great.
And you know what? He would cost a lot, but you could probably get him for a reasonable amount comparatively to other superstars of his calibre.
What's a reasonable amount?
I reckon you could get him at United for 150 mil. I actually think United are a really poor selling club.
I would.
In the same respect,
I'd snap your hand off if I could get Pogba. If I could pay you 150 million for Paul Pogba, I'd be delighted.
3 years left on his current contract, so two at the end of the season. I actually think that it's not a unfeasible amount of money for Real Madrid to pay.
150 mil for Pogba.
But what new manager,
that's great,
in their right mind is going to come in when Jose Mourinho inevitably leaves at the end of the season and let Paul Pogba
maybe
go?
So that is an issue, and if Zidane comes through the door, I think Pogba will probably stay because it's Zinedine Zidane. But what I will say is I think he fits lovely in a Real Madrid system.
Lovely.
Lovely. I really do. I looked at some of his World Cup statistics because I thought it's more likely he's going to be playing in that type of role at a club like Real Madrid than he is with the United one, because United, his creative numbers, although good, are still massively down on his final season at Juventus.
Yeah, they're not where they should be, and you're saying that France is a better indicator when he's playing his best.
Basically, and I'll tell you one of the reasons, and that man is called Casemiro. And he doesn't have a Casemiro at Manchester United, but he does at France, and he's called N'Golo Kanté. And I was looking at how much difference he made for the French national team, and Pogba actually came out top of every single player at the World Cup for average metres gained going forward for either passes or dribbles.
Yeah. 114 progressive passes minutes, and runs, yeah.
114 metres, sorry, per 90 at the World Cup. He was making 84 metres in forward passes and 30 metres via dribbling. That's better than KDB, and it's better than Eden Hazard. Now, Eden Hazard, admittedly, was 75 metres made in dribbles
That's mental.
But Pogba was right at the top of the most incisive players in an attacking sense, particularly midfielders.
And especially, and both in receiving and playing passes.
And do you know who was the best defensively? N'Golo Kanté. Second best, sure. Casemiro. Casemiro put up the second best defensive numbers of any midfielder in the entire World Cup. And if I'm going to play a system like Pochettino played, I want a defensive midfielder who can drop between the centre-backs and destroy in a similar manner to Victor Wanyama or Eric Dier. And a better version of them is a Casemiro.
Yeah.
I'm going to want a midfielder who can progress the ball forward via dribbles and passes, like Moussa Dembele, is Paul Pogba. I'm going to want a midfielder.
So this sale is a two-headed snake. It's Paul Pogba, Galactico, Paul Pogba, perfect foil for Casemiro.
I think Paul Pogba is the perfect foil.
Can play in your two, can play in your three, can play in a progressive three,
can probably play in a similar way to how he did with Matuidi, with Toni Kroos.
And if you're getting Kane in, and you might potentially need a bit more creativity out of midfield, Paul Pogba solves that issue.
100%. And I'm also looking at, I think there's really nice balance in a midfield three if we wanted to play that way between Casemiro, Kroos and Pogba. Pogba fits a nice age profile, 25, turning 26 in March. Toni Kroos is, I believe, 29 at the turn of the year. I think it's just an all-round perfect transfer as a Modric replacement.
I have two objections.
Go on.
One, you've cheated, and he's also a superstar. Because he was on my shortlist, and so was Naby Keita, and I rejected them both because they're superstars.
Agreed.
And I'm not going to get them.
You're a fiend.
I didn't get the memo that you can have a superstar.
And also, there's the element of it where I think...
debauchery, that.
You know what? He may not... I've got Kovacic coming back.
I agree.
I also think you can't have your cake and eat it. You're not spending 200 mil on Harry Kane and then another 150 on Paul Pogba.
Well, I'm spending 200 mil on one of them because one of these boys has to arrive at Madrid in order
for them to be a success. You've just spread your bets, haven't you?
I've spread my
bets.
You've
covered your bases.
Imagine, though, imagine the camera panning along, though, in a Champions League game and you see Kane next to Pogba and you think, oh, shit. We're gonna get a naughty little job.
I just think Pogba is the perfect replacement for Modric. Covers a bunch of different roles and improves Casemiro.
Yeah, no one's denying that. But like,
he's too expensive. Okay,
it's not reasonable.
It's made our suggestions feel a little bit.
Let me hear your two.
Yeah, mine's like a normal bloke.
Let me hear your two.
I mean, I've gone for again an A and a B because I'm indecisive.
Love the A and the B.
Right. So Modric this season. 1.3 shots per game, averaging 48 passes per game, which is the ninth highest in the team, by the way, just to give you a bit of context. It was 68 in his pump in 15-16, 3.3 long balls, 90% pass accuracy. That's what we're looking to replace. You've articulated that already with Pogba. But what he is a creator, not necessarily a goal-getter. So my two guys kind of bear that in mind. I've gone for Rabiot. I will make this shorter because, sure. I mean, you're cheating bringing Pogba to the table. I'm cheating bringing two people to the table.
Okay, yeah, I'm the only person who hasn't cheated.
Yeah, well,
yeah, you are. Yeah. Well, first time.
Moral compass around this table is Van Straat.
Appreciate it.
Right, Rabiot, 23. His contract expires in 2019, so we could feasibly pick him up on a free. And
for details, see last week's episode.
Yeah, a lot of us, and by a lot of us, I mean kind of in all three when we did a pilot, see him as the perfect long-term heir to Sergi Busquets. So imagine if they snapped him up
From under the noses
of Barcelona. Mm. He's currently valued at 45 million. Again, that doesn't really matter because we could get him for free. Two goals in nine starts this campaign, so a little bit more effective going forward than he has been in the past. I think he only got one goal last campaign, so already eclipsed that. Can play central midfield, CDM. an extremely unique skill set. This guy is elegance personified.
But can he play with Casemiro?
He's good going forward.
I think so. Play with Thiago Motta.
So he's great going forward.
True.
And he's also taken Thiago Motta's role this campaign. So it gives us a little bit more tactical flexibility. If we don't need Casemiro for one of the lesser ties, but we still want a progressive midfielder in there who can attack going forward, then Rabiot's your man. Very press resistant too, which Casemiro doesn't necessarily have. I mean, Casemiro's tied in the ball, he can defend it well, but
fabulous destroyer, Casemiro.
Rabiot's a brilliant dribbler. There's not many like him around. I'd actually say that Kovacic, Alan, Pogba all have unique skill sets in the same way that Rabiot does. 3.1 tackles and interceptions per game. This number goes up in the Champions League. So this isn't where his area of expertise is, but such is his tactical flexibility, like I said. He can just slot in. He's got very good game intelligence, very good game management.
But we come back to the fact his mother is awful.
Stop it.
Yeah, but it's Real Madrid.
If it's not Wanda Nara, it's Rabiot's mother. You're a chauvinistic pig.
It's Real Madrid. And to be fair, like, a lot of these people are dicks so that they can get their dream move. And then once they get their there's kind of no need to be a dick anymore. They're like, well, we've arrived now. Listen,
really? That Sergio Ramos.
His mum is apparently a battle axe, but we're going to move on. 0.5 key passes, but his XG chain, which is how much you're contributing, how good your build-up play is effectively, it's a good barometer of that, is about the same as Modric per game. So his build-up play, very progressive. Most of his passes going forward. More of a goal threat, but significantly less creative at the moment. But he's getting there than Modric. Okay, so quickly gone through Rabiot. Hear me out.
How long is this one going to be?
For Zielinski.
Can I just a quick note on Rabiot? Well, I think please. We should really discount him. Surely he's Barcelona's. We said it last week, but I'll allow it. But I think it's close to the line of.
All right. We have infinite money.
Then why can't I have Pogba and Ken?
I've submitted him, but we can decide at the end. You can discount him at the end.
Zielinski,
well within your rights,
who might be about to sign a new contract.
Moving on to Zielinski, didn't know that man strong. Thank you very much. Which, arguably, I could play as my wild card. In fact, I'm going to save it for my wild card because Van Straaten actually suggested Sane. Sane was my wild card. I know you've done Sane as well.
Yes.
It makes perfect sense for me to leave Zielinski until then. Moving on to you, Van Straaten.
My midfielder, I wanted Christian Eriksen, but too expensive, even though his contract ends in 2020. So I am going for Tanguy Ndombele.
Oh, I looked at him as well.
Okay. Now, Leon fame.
Yeah, well, numbers last season suggest he should contribute to a goal every 4 or 5 games, about the same as Modric. But Ndombele is 21.
He's also the largest man I've ever seen in the flesh.
He's colossal. He has incredible...
He's like a shed.
Last season, I thought he was really one-footed, you know, and I didn't mind because he was great with that foot. But this season, massively improved. Like, that defence-splitting ball on his right for Memphis Depay playing against Manchester City. And he's been actually tremendous in the Champions League this year. Like, last season, over 2.5 dribbles completed a game for a central midfielder is unusual. Now, Real Madrid actually have three guys who can do that in Modric, Kovacic and Ceballos. But I want Tanguy Ndombele to come in because he couples that with a good defensive work rate. I think if I have Ceballos, Kovacic and Casemiro and Ndombele, then I could actually potentially run a sort of system like Juventus did when they protected Pirlo with Vidal and Pogba. I could do that potentially with Toni Kroos. If I have two really hard runners either side who are protecting that guy who's just spraying past.
So you're getting the bargain basement Pogba?
Essentially, yeah. Because I have to go in the bargain basement because those were the rules.
And much like your rationale for Pogba, he would actually... Ndombele would bring out the best in Toni Kroos as well, who's approaching 29, needs that protection, but he's still the metronome, still the creative hub at the base of that midfield.
And he's progressive enough that you could actually play him in a two with Casemiro because of those dribble numbers. And he's got very good key pass numbers. They've gone up over two this season, which at the age of 21 is pretty spectacular. Yeah. And especially given that creativity in that team is not necessarily something that's technically his role. He's just doing it anyway. Nearly 4 defensive actions a game, which is very solid. And I think that he could probably improve that if you asked him to play as a 6, which he hasn't had to do because of Tuzar. So I think that he works in any 3 with Kovacic, Ceballos, with Kroos, with Casemiro. I think that, I don't know, maybe we'd have to pay 40, 50 million euros, but I don't think that that's too much for a player of his quality. And this season in the Champions League, very impressive, despite playing against sides who want to muddle the game up in midfield. You know, like, so I can understand people saying, well, his dribble numbers are great, but he's playing in France. But you look at who he's played against in the Champions League, Hoffenheim, Man City. These are teams who are so hard to run through the middle of. And he did it. He just comfortably did it.
Do you know who else does it?
Massive.
Rabiot.
who would be free.
He's not
at
as
the
fast.
End
he's not fast though.
Of this year. Rabiot's got a very decent turn of pace.
I was going to say he's. Pogba. I'd say he's not. I wanted to say he's tremendously slow, but I'll say he's just quite slow.
He's leggy.
He's quick off the mark. It's because
he's all right.
He glides. Van Straten. He doesn't run. He's like Kaká. He's like the French Kaká. I said it. Yeah. Right.
Wow.
He's more like Andre Gomes, the Spanish midfielder.
Interesting.
Shall we move on then to wild card? Seeing as so you've gone on Ndombele.
Ndombele.
You've gone Rabiot.
I think
and I've
vanity plays a role with Ndombele. Do you think Florentino Perez sanctions Ndombele as his key midfield summer sign?
If he's bringing in Dybala, yes.
And
I if think
he's and potentially if he's partnering him with a new contract for Kovacic.
And also, if I'm Pochettino. Yeah. I love the idea of Ndombele coming in, because what do I see in Ndombele? I see Moussa Dembele.
Just bring Kovacic back.
Well, I will.
And what do you see in Pogba? A better version of Moussa.
I see somebody who is fiscally irresponsible.
Such thing at Madrid, man. No such thing at Madrid.
Just an outright cheat. Anyway,
we move on to wild card. Do your Zielinski then, because you've spoiled it.
Yeah, I have. Let's get it out of the way then. Zielinski. Now, my rationale for this was, and it's not... I mean, he's still a young guy. He has a lot of football under his belt. He played 66 times for Empoli under Sarri from 19 onwards for two seasons. So my rationale there is that he'd probably be quite adept at playing in a high-pressing system that no doubt Pochettino would employ. Comes from good stock as well. His brothers are both footballers.
Exciting.
That really is helpful.
He can operate in
let's
both.
Sign Enzo Zidane.
Ian Botham played cricket and football.
What do they call him?
Beefy.
Didn't he play for Scunthorpe?
Yeah, I think so.
What a ledge. He can operate in both attacking midfield and CM. He's a good dribbler. He can travel at pace. He's got a good range of progressive passing too, which you certainly need when you're replacing Modric, don't you? 65% of his passes forward last season went forward, sorry. Two-footed as well. Good shooter from range. Although his finishing last season, a lot left to be desired. I think his shooting accuracy was around 30 to 40%, which not great given the amount of attempts he was having. And he is diminutive. Not much of a physical presence like Ndombele. But last season, I mean, 6 goal contributions in a very limited amount of starts. 2 in 8 this season. He's growing in stature, certainly under Ancelotti. Understat, I think he should have 2 assists as well, according to expected assists. So his numbers could be even more impressive. In 18-19, his tackles and interceptions are up. So he's working on his defensive shortcomings, definitely under Ancelotti. Marginally up from 1.3 combined to about 1.7, but up nonetheless. 2.3 shots per game, that's 1 more than Modric. And 1.9 key passes per night, about the same as Modric at his peak in 15-16. So when I said Rabiot is more effective going forward, this guy is much more of a creator.
How old is he again, sorry?
23, 24?
He's 20. I think he's turning 24 in May.
Here are my objections to him.
Shoot.
1, I think we have this guy in our squad. 2,
Kovacic.
And Ceballos. 2, you want us to get in Rabiot and this guy.
No.
Because you know that we can only pick one of your players.
Yeah.
But I feel like you've got to imagine that an ideal world, you're getting all 3 of these players. That's what I'm imagining.
In my head, I was going to weigh up these players as we spoke about them and ultimately go for one. And I think it would be Rabiot in this equation, but I think Zielinski is an interesting player. Profiles, I think he's fascinating. And I do think there's a lot more to come from him.
Not a regular in the Napoli team, though.
No, but getting
which makes
there.
Me worry. A
but
bit.
Getting there.
But if he's not good enough to start for Napoli, is he good enough to start for us?
I mean,
I'm really playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, 18 starts.
Because I wanted Arsenal to sign
22 substitute appearances, which would suggest that Sarri wanted to play him. But when you've got Alan, Hamzik in your midfield. And Jorginho, it's a very tough nut to crack, isn't
Diawara it? Diawara as well isn't playing.
Exactly, Diawara, we really liked him, and he had a very limited amount of minutes last campaign. So, come next year, much like one of your targets who I forget about now, the sample size will be bigger, Harry Kane.
I wouldn't be mad about them signing him.
We'll be able to make a more informed decision.
If they signed him, I'd say, they don't need that guy, but I get why you'd buy him. Yeah. Kind of the way I felt when they signed Kovacic.
Yeah.
I was like, why are they getting this guy? Oh, he is great though. So
then they'll loan him to Arsenal in 2 years' time. It'll be great.
Delightful.
All right, you go in or am I going?
I'll go if you want.
Go on.
My options here, I was either going to get a left back to replace Marcelo, because that's something that needs to be done, or another forward, because I still think we're thin on the ground at forward, even if I get into Dybala. Bale's injured. Karim Benzema is sticking out of a toaster because he's done. Mariano is not Real Madrid standard. Asensio is good but very young. So I decided, I was between Raf Guerrero as a left back or Steven Bergwijn as another forward from PSV Eindhoven, and I've gone for him. Mm. He's a 21-year-old. We've got a limited budget here, I'm assuming.
I like that you've gone defence, because
I haven't. I've gone for a forward.
I mean, oh, well, left back then. I mean, well, I wanted to put like De Ligt in there, but we talked about centre backs last episode, and it was hard, wasn't it? But yeah. I like that you've gone defender for this.
One of my options was a centre back.
Well, my thought about left back as well, though, in the end, ultimately, I was like, we may not love Theo Hernandez, but he's coming back from loan. Achraf Hakimi has been playing left back for Borussia Dortmund. Those guys will tide me over.
Very good point.
They will tide me over for now. And if we went to three at the back, then Theo Hernandez might even be a better fit for that. You know, who knows?
What, than Vallejo?
Well, no, than as a standard left back. Viejo would. I mean, he's a centre back like who would help us with the three at the back and would allow us to maybe play a more attacking player, I suppose, at wing back.
Why have you gone for Bergwijn then?
Because I'm assuming I have a very limited budget here to get a wild card.
Oh, right, well, that's mine gone then.
I'm spending a lot on Ndombele. I'm spending an awful lot on Dybala. And I think that a wild card should be... I think Real Madrid have done a really good job in the last few seasons of picking up players in defence, and particularly in midfield, for low fees who could potentially turn into stars. But they haven't really done that in attack. The only guy they've gone and got is Asensio. And they're kind of lucky he's turned out to be as good as he has. At the moment, they're relying on quite substantial minutes from Lucas Vazquez. And I don't hate Lucas Vazquez, but I don't think he's Real Madrid standard, really. Not as a regular. And so, for me, Steven Bergwijn is a kid who could be a superstar. 21 years old, can play across the front line or as an attacking mid. He's got 4 goals and 5 assists in about 800 minutes so far this season, which is pretty spectacular. 3 dribbles a game, 3 shots, 2 chances created. And apparently, after January, he has a clause in his contract which makes him available for €20 million.
Ayo.
That is exciting.
Cheap!
And so I think, you know, last season there were times they were thinking about playing Borja Mayoral. Before they sold Mariano to Lyon, they were using him in cup games because they had absolutely no support for their strikers. A guy who was still in their academy at the age of 23, they were using in that role. So I think Bergwijn is cheap. His wages would be nothing, and there's an outside chance he turns into a superstar. And not even an outside. There's a very good chance he turns into a very good player. An outside chance he turns into a genuine Real Madrid quality.
There's some decent defensive talent circulating in the Eredivisie, isn't it, at the minute? I was actually looking at, and I couldn't flesh it out enough to bring him to the table, but is it Van Beek, Feyenoord? I'm not sure if you know a lot about him. And
I know Van de Beek at Ajax.
And there's also...
Oh, yeah. I saw this guy. Yes. He's, oh God,
he looks like he might be exciting.
I can't remember what his first name is.
Because there's like Donny Van de Beek as well.
Yeah. I don't know.
But there's Von Beek, and he partners up with, I want to say Kongolo. Them as a partnership seemed quite interesting. And there's also Denzel Dumfries, who we've touched upon a little bit. But I'm not sure if he's...
My only thing is I wouldn't go for a defender out of the Eredivisie unless it's someone truly outstanding like De Ligt. I think that you're kind of...
It's hard to navigate, isn't it? The tackles and interceptions, in the same way the forward numbers are super charged.
I'd rather take a gamble on a defender out of the Bundesliga or Liga, to be honest with you, because I think I can do that. And I think if I look below the top level in Italy, I can probably do it as well. Or just in Spain. You know, there are decent fullbacks to be found in Spain. Like, look at Johnny coming over. Who looks great this season. So I think that getting a forward from the Eredivisie, a young forward, gives us some more backup. Because if I get Dybala in, Dybala gets injured, I'm back to exactly where I am right now.
Okay, well, I've taken the wild card very differently to you boys. You guys have taken.
Are you spending more money?
I'm spending a lot of money. Well, I mean, I did.
This might be your most expensive time.
I did look at David Neres
as well.
For this option, but I just didn't see him as a Real Madrid signing. I think he needs a stepping stone club before a club like Real Madrid.
And to a certain extent, like when I've done this, you could also say Rodrigo, who's coming in next summer, is going to be that guy.
I also,
like, you can make that argument.
100%. I also, because I wasn't aware that we were going for cheap options here, I also really looked at John Stones.
Ooh.
I just thought that John Stones, with an ageing Sergio Ramos, who's now 32, I think they're probably going to try and phase him out over the next couple of seasons. Who they're going to try and phase him out for, I'm not sure. Is it going to be Vallejo? It's definitely going to be Nacho. He's 28. So potentially, I was originally thinking I'm Aymeric Laporte, but
Paris wants Ramos
money.
So that is an interesting angle to take.
I was originally thinking John Stones. I thought he'd be a brilliant partner for Rafa Varane.
I mean, that would be fun.
But equally,
he's not as mobile.
Man City will never let you break up Stones-Laporte.
I can't see it happening.
Laporte.
So I've gone for another Man City player who is going to cost a lot, but not as much as we think, I don't think.
Okay.
I've gone for Leroy Sané. We mentioned him previously. He's under contract until 2021. Obviously, still just 22 years old. We all know about Leroy Sané. Ridiculous dribble numbers. ridiculous expected goals and assist numbers for a player of his age. Not really fancied by Pep. As much as Pep likes him, I just don't think he's a Pep system player.
Yeah.
Well, in the same way Mendy, that, doesn't he? Mendy and Sane aren't playing in the same side.
And even then, I think he also probably now already prefers Mahrez in terms of he can get better movement from a squad with Mahrez in than he can with Leroy Sane, if you know what I mean. I think Leroy Sane is darting around doing things.
Sane's a super or will be the superior.
I completely agree. I mean, I was looking at some of his numbers and some of it's like sort of Kylian Mbappe numbers in terms of his dribble percentage and all that kind of thing especially. And I actually was reading an article today in the City might well be willing to offload him fairly soon. And I can't remember who wrote it, but they were suggesting fees of around somewhere between 60 and 80 million euros.
Bollocks.
And I was thinking,
There's no way.
I was thinking, no way. But even if I could get...
If I were Bayern Munich, I would kill everyone between Munich and Manchester to get that signing.
So would I.
That's almost happened before.
But I have to say, I would probably pay 100 to 150 for Leroy Sané.
Yeah, definitely. Of course you would. But I'd also look at Sterling. Because year left on his contract.
I would as well. But it doesn't really fit the bill.
He has improved.
I haven't really judged the wild card the same way you boys have.
I mean, I can see why. And I had him down as well. And it is because all of a sudden he's become unfancied. So I can absolutely see why he brought him to the table. But yeah, we went a bit more left wing.
I think that's fair enough.
Let's make our picks then.
So we make our picks.
So Poch
manager.
Poch is the manager.
Poch is the manager.
Pochettino.
Who's the superstar?
Wenger is the manager. Right. Who is, yes, the superstar?
So it's either Harry Kane, it's Paulo Dybala,
or Sergio Aguero. Ooh.
I want to discount Aguero.
I do as well. I'm sorry.
I mean, that makes it pretty short.
I understand your reasons for wanting him. And if I could get him, say he was out of contract in the summer, I would sign him 100%. But he isn't. And I'm going to have to pay a lot for an old man.
I can live with this, guys. It's a diploma.
I think Dybala's the man for me.
Yeah,
it's a democracy is the word I was looking for.
Dybala. I wanted to go for Dybala as well instead of Harry Kane, but I just felt like they needed a goal scorer. But you convinced me. I'm happy to give up.
He ticks multiple boxes. I do think Aguero guarantees goals. Dybala. All right, I'm not happy, but let's move forward.
Heir to Modric. What have we got?
So we've got Pogba, Rabiot. And Ndombele's out.
It's Pogba and Rabiot. I mean, that was all the more reason for going for Dybala because I don't think Ndombele was in the race.
So I'd say
you've both made bad choices.
So I think here, I don't think we can afford Pogba if we're going Paulo.
But the thing is, if I have a choice between the players, I definitely go for Pogba. However, you're not going to be failing in... I mean, Rabiot's going to be really good.
And the reason I think we get Rabiot is because that frees us up the funds to go Sane.
You take Rabiot Sane over Pogba Zielinski.
I think so.
Yes, you would.
And I think if you have a front line of Paulo Dybala, let's say Gareth Bale and Leroy Sane
with
Asensio and Isco playing roles, you've got Casemiro, Kroos and Rabiot as a midfield three. I think with Pochettino as manager, all of the tricks in the book are available for you.
Wow.
So, to fix Real Madrid, we've gone Pochettino as manager, we've gone Dybala as superstar, we've gone Rabiot in midfield, fixing multiple holes in the same way that Dybala does, and we've got Leroy Sane adding that cutting edge.
They definitely miss it going forward as
and
well.
And he feels... Sane always feels quite Real Madrid to me. Yes. That guy flying down the wing, wearing the number 7, killing people. Yeah. Like, that's what Leroy Sane is.
So there we go. That's how you fix Real Madrid, is it?
We fixed like £6 billion worth of teams over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I need to get me a fucking pay rise.
Right then, let's keep Rose Ed short and sweet this week, a little bit like myself, before we move into facts. And one thing that's annoyed me from the past couple of weeks in football is when a co-analyst, and it was Owen Hargreaves this time, gentlemen.
Oh, lovely hair,
though. A co-analyst.
Who I don't mind, but his voice, I find it hard to pinpoint in my head. As a result, it annoys me.
Is that the Rose Ed? Owen Hargreaves' accent?
No, I wouldn't have an issue with that.
His Canadian, Germanic, British accent.
Yes. It's tremendously irritating.
He sounds...
Great penalty taker.
The only guy who sounds weirder than him is Elon Musk.
Great knees.
Yeah, Elon Musk does sound weird. Do you remember on the Joe Rogan podcast? Sounds like the Microsoft Sans voice. I am Elon Musk.
I hate Elon Musk.
I am building tunnel under LA.
And he's just scared of robots.
It's like in Blade Runner. It's like when Rick Deckard is hunting down robots to kill that oppose humans.
Elon Musk went home after he smoked that joint and watched Westworld. And now he's scared of machines.
Do you know?
He's a pussy.
He actually said the word pit 32 times in that podcast. Pit.
The Joe Rogan podcast.
Anyway,
we're
coming for you, Joe.
It's a weird thing to talk about.
Let's move on. Because he's actually building a massive hole.
That's all it is. Just pouring money into a pit.
He's building roads under LA to alleviate the traffic.
Anyway, he started with a pit.
What Owen Hargreaves said, and it can be summarised as kind of lazy journalism or lazy analysis, is when the commentator, the chief, the one anchoring it, said, what is the problem here? I believe it was Chelsea United when Chelsea were just walking over United first half. Owen Hargreaves said, and it might have been a Champions League game, I don't know if it was a United game. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's because X team is affording Y team too much respect. And I hear it all the time.
What does it mean?
What does it mean? And it's a phrase that is so well-trodden.
They've given them too much respect.
It's a get-out-of-jail-free card, isn't it?
And no one says with, like, you know, Mourinho would park the bus. He'd be playing a much better side and he'd park the bus. But sometimes it wouldn't work and he'd lose 1-0. And no one would say, well, he gave them too much respect. People would be like, he had a game plan. And he did, yeah, exactly. Like, had a game plan, didn't work. Like, whereas here, it's just like giving them too much respect. He's like, I know that they're not playing well, but I don't know why it is. So I need a soundbite. So it'd be like, probably winning mentality.
This is the informed side. This is the side who aren't doing so well. Inferiority complex has got to be. That's the only thing
we
can boil it down
Which
to.
Is 100% how players think, right? Yeah. That Pogba looks at like Kovacic and he thinks, oh, God. Like, not him.
Better show him some respect.
3.7 tackles intercepted for 90. Pog was on who scored the night before. Jesus. Anyway, let's move on. Guys, let us know your annoying sound bites from co-commentators, specifically on Twitter. We are now moving into Fox with Rafa Benitez. In fact, with Patrick Van Straaten. Has George made a sting for it this week? Let's see.
I'm talking about facts. Facts. Facts.
So you may or may not have just heard a sting made by our very own George Wright. We move on to facts with Rafa Benitez. And this week I am doing it. I've brought three facts in. Only one of them is true. Two of them are lies. Or perhaps they've been embellished and I've cheated like Chris Hamill. Might have done that a little bit.
Shout out.
So I'm going to read off my facts. And then you can quiz me and see if you can work out where the truth is and where the lie
is. Time to get quizzical.
Yep. Number one. Former chief executive of Arsenal, Ivan Gazidis, newly of AC Milan, is my dad's first cousin once removed. Ooh.
Oh, wouldn't surprise me, you are rich.
Move.
Okay. No, he's married into money. Yeah. High five off camera.
Have done that. Number two, the first time I played rugby for my school.
Ooh. 100% true, whatever the rest of the sentence is.
I was sent off for swearing and taking a swing at the referee. And I was asked to withdraw from the team.
See, I know that you were asked to withdraw from the team, but I don't think, Joseph, just to, you know, get us into this second one, I don't think he ever mentioned taking a swing at the referee.
Okay.
He was actually barred from the team, I think, for aggressive tackling. I think it might have been his own teammates during training.
Okay.
So I think he's done what has now been coined in the business of facts of Rafa Benitez as a Matt Elliott there. There's a truth within a lie.
Okay. Fascinating. I want to hear the third.
Fascinating analysis. Number three. I once got trapped in a car outside Gillingham train station when a fight broke out with Millwall fans and two supporters were stabbed.
Oh! Oh my God, that's dark.
Well, I think... Or is it a dark thing that happened to me?
I think Gazidis is off the table. He would have mentioned that long before.
I want to quiz him about Gazidis.
Okay.
What's Gazidis' middle name?
I don't know.
You should know that, really.
We're not friends with this. I've never met him. I've never met the guy.
He's your dad's cousin once removed.
First cousin once removed. So he's my dad's cousin's son. So Ivan Gazidis is South African. Don't know if you knew that. Greek South African, obviously, because of the...
The lie is so good that we don't know it's a lie.
And he is the grandson of my dad's mother's brother. Yeah. So my grandmother, my dad's mother, had a brother called Ivo, and his grandson, hilariously, called Ivan, which is a running joke.
He would have 100% mentioned this in the office if there was any, if there was a grain of truth. If there was a Declan Rice of truth in there, he'd have mentioned
especially it. Especially as Gazidis gets widely panned in the office, doesn't it?
We have no connection with that side of the family, though. So like, I never met Ivo. Ivo, I think, died like a couple of years after I was born, to be fair. But his daughter, Miriam, who is Ivan Gazidis' mum, never met her either. Like, basically,
why didn't he call her Ivy? That's annoyed me.
I don't think it's compulsory. Well, but that entire side of the family, like Ivo's kids, some of them are still in Zimbabwe, but some of them went to South Africa. They ended up in Joburg. That's where Ivan Gazidis is from. Then he came over to the UK as a kid, but we never really.
But here's the reason I think that might be a lie. I feel like we've done enough stuff about Arsenal that if we had that connect, we would have heard because we could have done something.
We have answered so many personal questions and quickfire questions on Sunday Vibes that if there was a shred of truth in that very otherwise interesting anecdote, he would have brought it up long before now. But the names, the geography, I applaud you for the web of deceit that you have just spun.
Okay, yeah. I mean, the ability to name, what is it, a first, second cousin or something like that, is unbelievable. I don't even know what our first cousin is.
Yeah, well, I had to like work it out for my dad.
Really, really quite impressive. What was the second one again?
The second one was the first time I played rugby for my school. I was sent off for swearing at the referee, taking a swing at him, and I was subsequently asked to withdraw from the team. I would have been 16.
And what position were you playing?
I was playing flanker in that game. What colour? I also played as a hooker.
What colour were your kits?
We had blue and yellow hoops, and our second kit was white.
You had a second
white.
Kit.
Wow, you had a second kit.
Yeah, so on a cold day, you'd wear one under the other, and then like hoops or whites, like you take that off.
And why did you swing at the referee? What did he say that enraged you so?
We were playing Skinner's School. They're a notorious group of scumbags. And on this particular day, it was a very icy day. This was in January, actually, this game, for some reason.
Horrible rugby conditions.
And basically, there were like three pitches, and we were on the lowest pitch in this particular game. And there were some icy patches. Everyone was like pissed off. And as a result, the referee who was meant to play in this game had not been able to make it. So one of their teachers stepped in, which we furiously appealed. And
one of their teachers stepped into play?
To referee the game.
Akin to a lino in football.
And we did not get a call all day. And I, as you can imagine, did not have great anger management at this point in my life. And I became enraged. And on multiple occasions, I was heard to call him...
Don't say
C
it.
Words. F words.
Can't get away with that.
Both C words. Cheat. Called him that as well. Ooh, he took
you can never call a rugby referee a cheat.
But I did. And wow. I married it with a swear word.
But if he had called him that, would he have been given his marching orders long before then?
It depends on the level. At professional, he would have been given his marching orders in the form of a sin bin. Were you sin bin before this, or was it a straight
record? I was actually sin binned earlier in the first half. I was able to come back on. Well, I think in these days it was only like 5 minutes. Like, so it was just like we were cycling on and off. And I came back on. And then in the second half, he red carded me because, as previously mentioned, I called him a cheating F.
And did you get Simbin for chat?
Yeah.
So Simbin for chat, sent off for chat, is feasible. Mm. I'm not sure. When I was playing schoolboy rugby, I was rocking 10 minute Simbins.
No, we had 5 minutes. We had 5 minutes in this, I think, because we were a little bit short of players.
But and okay. If I am Van Straten's manager and I have a full squad, as soon as he comes back on from his sin bin, I'm hooking him. Depends. Because I know that he is an emotional.
Depends on the quality of Van Straten as a rugby player. He might have been a key component to the team's success. And if you took him off because of the mouthiness, then you cost yourselves on the pitch.
I was a pretty decent flanker, but to be fair, I don't actually remember like what the complement of our squad was like that day. So we might have been quite thin in those positions.
Let's move on to the third one. What was the third one?
I once got trapped in a car outside Gillingham train station when a fight broke out with Millwall fans, between Gillingham and Millwall fans. Mm. I was in the car.
What were you doing in Gillingham?
I lived in Gillingham at this point in my life.
Jesus.
And two supporters were stabbed. I did not witness the stabbings, but there was blood on the pavement outside the car.
What year was this?
Would have been, I think, 2011, but there's a chance it was 2010.
Get out of the league tables from 2010. Were Gillingham and Millwall in the same division?
What league were they playing in?
And Gillingham,
what,
I don't know, I didn't
why
support
were you at
Gillingham.
The train station?
I didn't support Gillingham at the time. I was there with my girlfriend and we were picking up a friend of ours.
Was he involved in the fight?
No, she was not. And they ended up staying inside the train station because basically we just
Did the police turn up?
We locked the doors of our car. Yeah, we locked the doors of our car until the police turned up. Hannah was inside the train station. Waiting to come out. And the fight was honestly going on around us as somebody literally fell on the bonnet of the car. Like, there was blood on the pavement. Like I said, it was hardcore. Turned up. God, what was it?
Oh, got him. What was the make of the car?
I don't drive, so. It was, what was it? I think it was a Volkswagen. I think it was a Polo.
Oh, that's too generic, isn't
it? Volkswagen.
I think it was a Polo. Yeah, I feel like that was a too generic detail.
Well,
I'm trying to remember.
I think you may have tripped him over with the car.
I'm trying to remember my ex-girlfriend's car.
Although Van Straten is not a car guy. Ago. When did you split up with Hannah?
I didn't split up with Hannah. Hannah was our friend waiting inside the train station.
Oh,
I was
so what was your girlfriend's name?
Susanna.
Oh,
so when did you split up with Susanna?
At the end of 2011.
After the fight, after she got out and smacked some geezer over.
At the end of 2011. December 2011.
And you weren't tempted to get out and go, get off my car, you hoodlum.
Mate, there were Millwall fans and Gillingham fans. Of course I did.
Was Dave Horner there?
Dave Horner might have been. I can't confirm or deny.
Right, okay, let's pick one here.
I think...
What are you leaning towards?
I think the middle one is he's trying to throw us with the feasibility.
Would you, in what direction?
That you play rugby and you're an angry man. Or you played rugby.
Fair points.
And I fair point. I think...
You've profiled me.
I used a similar tack last week in that Didier Gath was in a toilet with him. But it wasn't. It was wee, not poo. Mm. I think he's definitely played the rugby game. Was probably sin-binned, but I'm not sure he would have swung at the referee. Not that Patrick has a lot of respect for authority. Mm. Whereas Gazidis, no, he would have mentioned it before. If not, he's kept that secret for reasons unknown. So I feel two or three. What are you feeling?
I'm feeling three. I'm feeling the fight. I'm thinking the fight. I think you're right. He's not a car guy. And I think that's the most likely.
Interesting.
Let's make a decision. I'm going three. You're going?
Well, we have to make a unified decision. I'm happy to go three.
Three, please, Patrick. We think the truth was the Millwall fight.
You're incorrect. Number two was the
truth. Oh, my God. That's so you scumbag.
Number three did happen, but it was my girlfriend and I was not in the car with her.
Oh.
And to be fair, I don't remember what car she drove.
Sexy details. You have successfully fooled us. Well done, Patrick.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Good facts. Good facts. Well done, Pato. We ran a little bit long there, so we're calling this one Fergie time. But please do rate and review us 5 stars. Share it with all your mates, the usual stuff. And anything else to add, gents?
Tweet out your favourite part. We had some nice ones last week. Really warm the cockles.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Bye.